Couple of minutes after 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. We're already midweek here on the Mornings with Ed show. Welcome to the program. As we do each and every Wednesday morning, we are delighted to have with us the president and CEO, the award-winning president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services, Laureen Gilbert, with us this morning. Good morning, Laureen.
Good morning, Ed. Good to be here.
It's good to have you this morning. How are you today?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Good, good. So this morning, I guess the buzz that I've been reading about this morning is that the Fed is releasing meeting minutes and the market is waiting on this news this morning. What exactly does that mean? What does releasing meeting minutes mean?
So after the Federal Reserve meets together, the presidents of that make up the Federal Reserve, so from the different areas around the country, they have a meeting, and then following that meeting, there's a release of the minutes. And there's, they wait a while. They have their meeting, then they wait, then they release the minutes. And so we are going to get that release of the minutes today, and we expect to hear more talk about how soon they may taper their purchases of mortgage-backed securities. And that has been, something that the Federal Reserve has been actively doing now, $60 billion a month in purchases there. And so we know that eventually they're going to have to start tapering those purchases. And that's the first sign of what we call tightening that will happen with the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve is looking at what they see as a growing economy, accelerated inflation. They're looking at, the GDP numbers. They're looking at employment numbers. They look at everything together to say, has the economy recovered enough to where we can start easing off of what we've been doing? And in an investor's mind, that means also tightening up some of the money supply. Instead of creating so much money in the money supply, they would reverse that tactic at some point. And so we believe that they're going to start talking about it sooner than later. I expect them to say something about it in those minutes. And we'll be reading those minutes to see what they say.
Okay. And I think, so the markets are already open right now, and there is trading going on. Will it look substantially different this afternoon?
It can. Everything, that's the way the markets are. Markets are very cognizant of the news that is coming out. And so when we get news that either doesn't meet expectations, like as an example, yesterday we had ISM numbers that on the purchasing managers index that were weaker than expected. And it doesn't mean it was terrible. It was 60.1 for June and from the previous month of 64, but the expectation was 63.3. So even though 60.1 is an excellent number and is still considered a growth number, anything above 50 is a growth number, that was a disappointment. Now, along with that, the other point of that had to do with employment, and the ISM services sector employment index number fell to contractionary numbers. So it fell from 55.3 to 49.3, and that kind of rocked the markets a little bit there. So, the market, like I said, when we have new data that comes out, the market looks at that data and is very reactionary. Now, for investors, Ed, they don't need to be worried about the, intraday trading and what's going on. Most investors should be looking at their long-term goals. But when it comes to short-term trading, those kinds of things and news that comes out is what moves the markets day in and day out.
Right. I find it fascinating. And I find your explanation so very clear. Thank you so very much for that. We've been talking about this, it seems, way too much, that businesses and governments this morning around the world are scrambling to understand yet another major ransomware attack that hit over the weekend that could potentially cost tens of millions of dollars and affect more than 1,000 other companies. What steps should business owners take? And I'm really curious, if there's a small business that maintains a lot of customer data, can that small business get funding anywhere to help them defend themselves against ransomware attacks?
Well, Ed, you make a really good point that small business needs to worry about this just as much as large corporations need to worry about it. And so for a small business owner, really looking at their cybersecurity and what are they doing to keep all of their information safe, whatever that information is, because no one wants the reputational risk of something happening in your small business that could, in a sense, devastate your business prospects. So definitely it's something that small business owners should look at. And funding for that would be the same as any other funding. So either through the SBA, which is very available for small business owners, as well as your local business bank that you're working with that's focused on helping small business, that can help businesses with the funding that they need for that. I will say what I want to add here, Ed, is that this idea of ransomware is not going away anytime soon. We know we have international predators who are going to continue on this path, especially in the areas of Russia that we need to worry about. And I would expect to that end that there's going to be political pressure from DC policy towards, you know, what can the government do to help on this issue of ransomware across the United States. But certainly for business owners, they need to get ahead of this and do everything they can to keep their data safe.
Right. Now, I thought when the Colonial Pipeline involved the FBI before they paid their ransomware, I thought, well, there's a formula for success. I thought, you know, you're involving the FBI in the, and that allowed the FBI to obviously track where the money went and where it wound up. And I guess I thought that that would make, you know, that would be the new model moving forward.
That makes sense. That makes sense. That certainly does make sense that they can get involved in that. So that's a great point.
Right, but a lot of companies aren't following or just paying the ransom without involving the FBI.
Right.
Let's keep in touch with that. That's fascinating to me. Something else that's fascinating is the Chinese version of Uber, Didi. I think that tell me if I'm wrong that the Chinese government itself helped crash the stock, and it went down substantially over the last several days. Why do Chinese companies continue to list in the United States, and they're raising money in New York? I guess there's a move to stop that.
Well, there's issues on both sides, but from the Chinese government, what they did is they kind of stayed in the background until after the IPO of Didi, and so, you know, the investors in Didi made all their money, right? Because it went IPO and they made their money.
Right.
And the people that were left holding the bag were the people that bought the stock at the IPO. Because then after the fact, Chinese Cyberspace Administration conducted a review and basically, you know, was trying to stop everything and not allow the app to move forward. So what that shows you, Ed, is how government can be that force to even halt a company and shut everything down. So, and especially in China. So what I would say to investors is investors beware of those companies coming from China, because investors need to worry about the government doing just what they did, which was intervene and collapse, in a sense, a stock. And, you know, investors that invested in that and the IPO are now holding back. Once again, like I said, the people that made money were the people that owned it pre-IPO. But the people who bought it as a stock after the IPO are the ones who now no longer have a stock worth very much.
Right. Now, who should be in charge of regulating whether or not Chinese companies keep listing in the U.S.?
Well, and the U.S. has been very concerned because of understanding that intervention. But not only that, being concerned about the Chinese potentially getting our data, right? So there's concern on both sides about data. And there's this tug of war in China. They want these companies to be global, and yet they want to control data. And from the United States perspective, they want to keep people's data safe as well. So they're concerned about that. So once again, it kind of goes along with the ransomware idea. These issues are going to take a while to work out. They're not going away anytime soon. And there will probably be regulations on both sides in the United States and in China that may halt more of this idea of global investment between the two countries until something is worked out.
Okay.
Thank you. If something can be worked out.
Thank you for that explanation. Last week, right before or right after we spoke, we got the new employment numbers. The employment report came out, and it showed a better than expected gain of 850,000 jobs in June. Talk to us about last week's employment numbers.
Yeah, so that was exciting. That's great. 850,000 jobs in June. That's fantastic. That means, you know, it brought the unemployment rate to 5.9%. Now, let's just talk about that. That is basically full employment. You know, it's certainly getting towards full employment. Now, before the pandemic, we were at 3.5% employment. But longer term, and that was the lowest we've ever, you know, seen in, I believe, over 50 years. So we certainly had the best employment data that we've seen probably in most of our lifetimes right there. But it's still persistently, you know, right now it's at 5.9. The government would like to see that still come down. But like I said, I think we're going to hear about this from the Fed. They're going to talk about what they think, because they've been very concerned. They've been more concerned about unemployment than they've been concerned about inflation. And I think now with this 5.9% number, that brings us into the range. It's below 6%, brings us into the 5. I think they're going to start getting comfortable with the idea because, listen, we're still working through the unemployment. And once those extended unemployment benefits start dropping off, and we know many states have been dropping off, I think we're going to see more people going back to work. And the Fed, now back to my point about the Fed needs to get ahead of this, not behind it. The Fed historically has always kind of gotten in trouble with themselves because they can get behind these things. So now I would say is the time to start in that idea of tapering and talking about tapering so that employment will still continue to go down, but we've got the inflation that we don't want to see get out of control.
Okay. And do you see employers maybe now raising wages a little bit? Do you see that happening?
We do. We do see them not only raising, we see them giving bonuses. That's been the trend, to see bonuses. And the thing that we're really fighting too, Ed, is that idea of the great resignation, where 9.9% of those who were unemployed were actually job leavers, people who just said, I'm quitting my job. And that number was higher, that number of 942,000 Americans was higher than the entire second quarter of 2019, which was 809,000.
Right.
So we've got a lot of people. What happened during the pandemic is people reevaluated their lives. They said, maybe I don't want to do this job. Maybe I want to do something different. Maybe I want to live in a new city or even a new state. We've seen people moving around. We're seeing people leave jobs. It's created a headwind for employers because employers are going to have to be more flexible with their employees, allow more remote work, more flexibility as far as their work, the way that people work. It has created, I think, a longer-term permanent shift in employment that employers are still trying to get a handle. And, you know, you and I have talked about New York and how, you know, the big banks are asking everybody to come back, and a lot of people are still saying no, and other people are willing to hire them. So there's going to be a big shift in employment.
Right, right. So the pandemic has actually changed our perspective on happiness. On, you know, now we used to just grind the 40 hours a week to go to work, and now it's about happiness a little more.
Well, I think that's right, Ed. And I think that, you know, we already knew millennials had more of this mindset about lifestyle being more important than, you know, the boomers, which were about getting ahead and right, making their mark and doing all that. And the millennials have been all about their lifestyle. And the pandemic solidified that for the millennials. This is the way, wait a minute. Millennials were like, wait a minute, we were getting caught up in the boomer mentality. No, we're not going to be that. So I think there's a real shift.
Right, I agreed. So we've been discussing inflation over the last several weeks, and you've been steadfast in what you've been saying. But what I'm reading now is that prices are rising even more quickly than anticipated. Is that a shift we should be concerned about right now?
Yeah, and we have been talking about this, and my concern was not just inflation, but the acceleration of inflation. And that's what we're starting to see, that prices of your core goods are going up quite fast. I mean, you know, going to the grocery store certainly can be a wake-up call. Certainly buying a car is a huge wake-up call. Now, we know with cars that a lot of that has to do with the semiconductor shortage, and eventually that will even out as the semiconductor, because cars need those semiconductors, and we've got a shortage and a supply chain issue. But other things like food, and even if you take, I don't know if you've gotten on a plane lately. I don't think you like to fly very much. But when you get, but if you were the person that wanted to get on a plane, like I do, right. Your prices have been going up for air travel. And so, you know, when you look at all these things, there's a lot of prices going up. There's also, like we were talking about, employment, because employers are having to pay more and give bonuses, et cetera. You've got some wage pressure, which all tells me, and I am consistent in saying this, don't think it's transitory. I do think it's more sustained. And some numbers just came out yesterday on a survey about, you know, do people think that the inflation is going back down to 2%, or is it going to be more sustained? And even people, many people think that it's going to be more sustained. So, you know, time will tell. I am looking forward, and we can talk about it next week, hearing what the Fed says today.
Okay. And just quickly, would it surprise you to know that at one point in my life, I flew over 100 times a year for a few years?
No.
Few,
oh, yeah. And maybe that's why you... And that's why you don't want to fly anymore, right?
Exactly.
Forget that.
So, Laureen, how do our listeners find you?
They can reach us by phone at 949-748-1177 or look us up at wealthwisefinancial.com.
As always, we thank you so much for stepping in this morning, and we look forward to talking to you.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Laureen, thank you so much. WealthWise Financial's President and CEO, Laureen Gilbert, and the WealthWise Moment. Thank you, Laureen. Money, 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 money. Money, money, money.